What's wrong with elevated horror? I mean, Jordan Peele fucking rules.
Obviously, but that's not Stab. Real Stab movies are meta slasher whodunits.
Hi, my name is Robert Lendrum.
And I'm Jamie Roberts.
And this is the Running Scared podcast,
where we review the movies that had you running away but coming back for more.
Oh yeah, we're coming back for more tonight, Jamie. We're reviewing Scream 2022, the remake, or part five. I don't know what you call it. But before we get to that, buddy, how you doing? We haven't talked it a bit.
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm feeling really good. Got a chance to watch this movie. It was, a little bit of time coming, but it was on my kind of dial. I wanted to get it happening. Finally had a little bit of time. We wanted to pod Dog Soldiers.
Oh yeah.
We couldn't get a hold of it, man. So I had, I put the bat signal out. I got it going on Amazon from London. I got a used DVD. You told me I'm getting this shit.
London, England.
I'm getting this shit from London, England. You're like, yo, man, just check out Facebook Marketplace. They have it in Welland.
Which is like 10-minute drive.
40K down the street. So anyways, I was pretty excited. Tweeted it out when I got the
I was like, oh good, it arrived, because I gotta borrow it off you, man. I don't know how I'm gonna watch
it. We're gonna watch it together, man. Just like we did when we were in grade seven.
Well, I like that.
We're gonna be doing that soon, but in the next couple of weeks. And actually we got a special movie that we'll be doing, and a friend of the pod, Ari Fleeman from 6 a.m. mm-hmm. Run, who is he's a massive horror fan. He loves like the 80s Blood Diner special. Rob, we're going to do it. We're going to bring to the listeners Chopping Mall. Are you excited about that?
I actually am so excited because I hadn't heard of this, and I've been looking it up and I'm like, holy shit, this looks like bad, which is like exciting too.
Yeah, it's like Short Circuit's little brother. He's going to be
evil stepbrother.
So that's good. So anyways, we got some good movies coming, and for the people out there, hey, listen, we're working hard on the Jogcast. It's coming soon. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm also working hard on? I'm working hard on Expedia. Rob, I have booked my first vacation in 5 years.
I'm so jealous.
I am so pumped. I'm going to be going down to sunny Las Vegas, Nevada in July.
So, all out, eh?
Exactly.
Speaking of gambling, it's legal in Ontario now to do single game betting. Did you put any money down this week?
I didn't. I did not wager anything this week. Did you, Rob?
I did. I put a bet down on the Leafs beating, what was it, Dallas the other day? No, it was someone before that. Anyway, Leafs win. And then on a second bet, I put Austin Matthews scores a goal and Leafs win. Both checked out. Pulled in $70.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. $70 is better than nothing. So. Yeah,
not better than kicking the shins.
Anyways, speaking about gambling, I think they gambled a little bit with this movie in terms of how they, their recipe for Scream 2022. Rob, just initial thoughts. What do you think about this film?
Ah, man. Well, I mean, we're going to dig into it. Here's the thing.
I know, we're totally going to go into it. I'm just wondering, just before we set you up for another loss on the one-line challenge, I just want to... Rob, you're taking L's more than
I thought we decided I won the last one. And then you posted it. What? I was like, didn't I win that one? Didn't you lose Tremors?
That's another thing. I've started to post audiograms from our podcast, right? Yeah. Like little snippets of us just being silly. And I decided that I was going to throw you under the bus. And I put you doing the one-line challenge with Malignant. I'm not like...
Oh, that was the Malignant one. Oh, shit.
Yeah, that was Malignant. I definitely won that one.
Yeah, you definitely won that one. I blew that one. But I liked also your Earl character countdown as the audiogram. Was a good one.
It was good, eh?
Yeah. All right. Do you want to do one-line challenge first? Or do you want to get into the directors and all that?
No, let's do the one-line challenge first. Let's kind of start it up and let's see what's going down.
All right. This time you have to go first because I am hosting, and you made me go first last time.
Okay. Let me just get myself ready here. Scream. Five. Let me try again.
You didn't even say a word. You said a number.
Scream. The return of a killer to the scene of a crime. the suspecting youth of Woodsboro, California, unveil horror once again when a familiar face from the past rears its ugly head to turn the town into trauma. Scream.
That's not bad. That's not bad. I'm still not sure if that was two lines or one.
I'm not sure what the fuck that meant. Anyways, okay. I don't think that was that good, but let's see what you come up with, right?
Yeah. Ready?
Go.
Scream. A copycat killer tries to rewrite the formula of the Stab movie franchise and take out one by one high school students in the same town, same place, same house as the original Stab movie. Scream.
Oh, that was good. That was good. You're definitely going to win that one.
So first impressions, one thing. We talked about this. It's a very apt phrase in this particular case. What are your first impressions of a film that is a rework of a film from 20 or 30 years ago, and it's the fifth one in the franchise, but it's really trying hard to reference the first one, and then it's trying to – is it even trying to set it up for future? Like, that's the part I'm not even sure about. Did they actually get the franchise back to a square one? So you talked about – off pod, we were talking about, like, we shouldn't judge this through the eyes necessarily of – the fans that saw the first movie. And we reviewed Scream 1, I don't know, way back when we first started the podcast.
Yeah.
So you said, think about the people who are coming in fresh. I'm trying to understand, like, what did those fans even want to see this film for if they don't know the old film? And that's where I'm having a lot of struggle with that idea of, like, perspective on this film. Who's it for? What baggage am I supposed to bring into this? Am I supposed to come in clean? And if I come in clean, like, it's, I feel like the film doesn't even work if I come in clean.
Well, you know what? I don't know. I think, like, I might disagree with you there. When you think about Scream 4 made in 2011 and this one made in 2022, it's over 10 years, right? So you got a lot of people that this would be their first experience, their first dance with the Scream franchise, right? So then you think about, you know, how is it as a standalone film? I think that if you have been somebody that has been with the franchise, you know, in the fresh idea and just how great that 1996 film was through Dimension Films, this will be a little bit underwhelming. Should have we expected something a little bit better with this film, Rob?
So I don't know if it's like better or worse or whatever, but what I'm driving towards here is that, like, the film, so spoiler alert, the film actually identifies this, like, new term they want you to use called requels. There's the character who is played by, there's Mindy.
Mindy, yeah. Mindy's the new Randy.
Mindy's the new Randy. So Mindy does this new breakdown of the rules, but then she breaks down the one scene is she breaks down how this film is a requel, or that this incident in their lives, because she's,
yeah,
it's a meta film, right? Where they talk about their own life as if it's part of the film. Anyway, Mindy says this is a requel. A requel has to reconnect to the original film, but refresh it with new characters, but still pull in some legacy characters to keep the, you know, the hardcore fans invested. And then it returned the film back to its, you know, irregular roots being a meta slasher whodunit. And then they even tell you at one point, like, if you're a character from the past movie, you're going to be attacked because this new Ghostface killer wants to wipe out everyone that's been in legacy films. So it's like, oh, okay. So the killer is sort of metaphorically representing what this film is supposed to be, a reboot and a refresh, but it's not quite the refresh yet. It's like the one in between, so that if they ever do a Scream 6 or whatever they're going to call it, they can start with a whole new cast and the sort of, like, clean of the storyline of the past. But of course, they don't do that. They end up, so they hunt down any character that was ever in any of the other films or their sons and daughters.
And does, like, that work though? Like,
no, it doesn't, because I don't know any of these people and I don't care.
Bringing in, like, Dewey, like, what was that? Like, they go to this trailer park, they were able to find him immediately, and he's like, they ask him to kind of, you know, be a part of it because Ghostface is back, and he's like, I'm not interested. 3 minutes later, he's interested. And he's like, you know what I mean? And then they bring in Sydney, and then they bring in Gale Weathers, and it just, it's all too convenient. It just seems like, let's get the band back together for the final performance. Yeah.
And there's even a line the girl Samantha says at one point, let's do this. Like, it's a superhero team that's like finally come together. I agree. Like, these characters, I don't get time to meet any of them long enough.
No,
to
exactly.
Give a
shit. Yeah.
I think like Vince Schneider, played by Kyle Gallner, can't pronounce it. But anyway, he's like that scuzzy guy. We only get to see him in two scenes. And I felt like that was a wasted opportunity. Like, this guy's hilarious. Just looking at him is funny. He's an immediate antagonist. Like, keep him around. Make him like push him into the friend group so that they are like trying to run for their life. And this guy has to be there to help them, or
have Mindy go talk to him and kind of be like, listen, if you want to get Liv back, you need to do this. And then like, he would have been, he would have been Liv. Fun to.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I'm interrupting you because I'm just like, my arms are up in the air right now.
So, but he's killed off too quickly. You know what? So that creates another problem.
Yeah. Ghostface is everywhere.
I was just going to say Ghostface is everywhere. He's too quick. He's killing everything. He's like fucking, that's fine.
But yeah, but when we find out who it is, it doesn't make sense.
I also think that with him, I think, you know, a lot of times, and this is kind of jumping way ahead, but I just want to kind of get this in really quickly. I think we want to put Ghostface on the same level, or a lot of people do, in terms of like a franchise villain, franchise killer, on like Jason and Michael Myers. And I don't think that that works for me. And the more you see him, I think the less that works as well. So I think even though that he's killing more, him as a character, him is that face.
Yeah.
Because really it's a one note villain with that mask, right? Because you just know that it's somebody that's dressed up in costume. The less you see of him, the more effective it is. And when you see him in those tension building jump scares, i.e. where Maze Runner dude is like getting his sushi plates out and then he gets fucking iced. I think it's better than that than seeing him everywhere and often, but that's just.
I'll disagree with you on that one. I like Ghostface as a killer because.
You do like him, eh?
I do, because he's more vulnerable. He gets beat up a lot. He's more like, we know he's a real person under there, who's one of the characters in the film. And so he has these physical limitations, which Michael Myers and Freddy don't have.
But he still gets gets his ass kicked, man. He always comes back from where he's got the bulletproof vest on.
Yeah, it's true. And he somehow had time to put all that on. But what I do like is that sometimes in a scene, you can think to yourself, like, how did he get from this point to this point? And you can usually justify it. I find that's a good thing about the Scream franchise, is that you can usually be like, okay, it makes sense. There's two of them. So this person could be here. Or this guy was able to run around the side of the house and that's where he'd be. And that's why it took like an extra 30 seconds and the tension's there. Whereas Michael Myers will like fucking teleport from one spot to another. And you're like, how the fuck did he get there that quickly? I agree with you that like when we find out who it is, he seems way bigger than both actors, by the way. Like both, not just the female, but he seems like physically taller.
Yeah, physically actually like a bigger character than like Amber is small. Yeah. And
she even identifies which scene she was in at one point. And you're looking at, if I go back and I'm looking at that, I'm like, that guy or that killer was the size of Dewey. Dewey's a 6 foot tall man. Like that's not what I saw. Like she's like 5 foot six.
Anyway. In the original, when we potted the original Scream, I fucking took Matthew Lillard. Took that guy to the fucking woodshed. Like, but you know what? I missed him in this movie. You needed somebody that was like over the top and crazy. And like, again, that big physical character. Cause like you got Amber, who's tiny. And then you got Joshua Jackson, who is not a big dude. He's got his bowling shirt on for sure. In terms of physical, in just of their appearance, Ghostface is absolutely bigger. Again, coming back just to perspective here, if you're like a 17 to 22 year old kid watching this film, are you getting the same kind of juice that the original, like that we got when we were watching the original one? Is it as clever? Is it as unique? Are you getting that kind of that play on film inside a film, making fun, picking at the horror tropes. Do you get that, or are they expecting too much from the audience? Is it, I don't know. What do you think there?
That's my hard time with this. Like, I don't think you can come into this fresh. You have to know the backstory. If anything, like, my thought was, okay, maybe this is the last one and they're trying to clean the slate so they can do something totally new next time, which at this point you're like, well, why would you want something new? Like, Scream is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a killer. And here's a question for you, Jamie. And this occurred to me while I was watching this, because I realized, wow, this is so repetitive from the first one. And I got to admit, I think they did some of that repetition in a way that was interesting. Not that I would, like the very first scene, I'm thinking of the Drew Barrymore scene. But then in this one, you know, they had to update it for the new technology. She's got a cell phone now. She doesn't understand the landline really. She doesn't use it very much. She doesn't even know why people use it. Then she's got the locks on her door digitally. So she.
I thought that was kind of cool.
That was clever, right? So what occurred to me, though, is like, what's at the heart of the Scream movie? We talked about this before, that it's sort of a feminist critique of the horror movie genre. But one thing that occurred to me is, why as viewers, I was asking myself, why do we like this? Like, why do we like watching a psychopathic male manipulate and play with his victims, which are usually female?
Have you ever seen Stab? It's a girl at home, alone. She answers a wrong number and starts talking with the killer, who makes her play a game. Would you like to play a game?
So what's our turn on to this kind of movie? And I don't mean this as strictly as a feminist critique. I just mean, like, why do we like, as a viewership of horror movies, why do we like a killer that toys with his victim? In this movie, he's entertaining us because he's like, he sets them up. He plays mental games with them over the phone. And then what's interesting, like I was saying about the ghost face, is that they often can fight him back, and they can usually put up a good fight in almost every scene in the Scream movies, where very rarely does Ghostface just like swoop in, hit you once, and like game over, he's got you. It's usually like a crazy fight to the death, like with like things going swinging, the pendulum swinging a few ways, right? And I think that's where the blood, the entertainment value comes in, because it's all that adrenaline firing through you. And then, you know, he's referencing old horror movies. He's like trying to enact old horror movies. So we're like having fun kind of spotting what is the thing that he's referencing here. Or we're also just spotting like what would be a crazy, scary thing, you know, situation to be in when a slasher is attacking you. Okay, Jamie, so let's take a look at some of these characters, do a little deep dive on a couple of them, and just pull out some of the things that we found odd or strange, and like, how did that play into either making this film work or not work?
Okay, so characters now and then. So let's go to like the Stu Mocker character, right? So this guy, actually, no, let's not there. I want to go to the jock that is in the most recent film.
Chad. And
yeah, let's go to Chad, okay? So Chad is, yeah, Chad's great. Like, Chad is a guy that, you know, if we think then and now, he's the guy from the most recent film. I didn't like this guy right away, but then I actually love this character, because I thought this guy was kind of the anti-jock, but kind of the jock. This guy just didn't know who he was, and then made me think, this guy's just himself. Like, he was actually a true character and reminded me of just a true person, a real person. Because I think the main characters, I have huge believability issues with some of the main characters in this film. And just, to me, it's like they're plucked off a Disney show and just put into this film. But Chad is really good, especially when he decides he doesn't want to have sex. He doesn't explain why he doesn't want to have sex. He just says he just might not be ready to have sex if it's not the...
That's a nice twist, yeah.
Yeah, he's like not concerned, but I like him. I liked him a lot. One of the characters I did not like a lot was... What is going on with the Maze Runner?
Yes, I didn't mind him, but again, I feel like...
Wes, what is the point of this character, Rob?
Yeah, not much. He doesn't nothing. He doesn't change anything in the film.
No, he doesn't do anything.
He basically just gets killed. The only thing is his mom, who I fucking hate. I love the first scene with the sheriff. She basically shits on Sam. And I'm like, is this lady trying to get herself like fired? Like, is this how you speak to victims? Like,
yeah.
What a fucking
idiot. You might just want to fucking, you know, exactly. Like you and your family caused, no, it was like you caused me so much shit as a kid. You might just want to take your sister out of town.
No, she didn't even say take your sister. She said you should get out of here. And it's also like, well, she just reported a second attack where she was the victim this time. And she escaped. So maybe you should maybe pull out your fucking notebook and take some notes here, Sheriff. Like, it was totally fucking stupid. And like this, if you imagine a sheriff like just blowing someone off like this, and people have experienced this in real life. So this is like maybe calling upon that a little bit. But Sheriff is the mom of Wes. Yeah, both characters, I guess just because their connection to past movies had to go. Can I wrap up a few people into one thing here before we start pulling more apart, because I think I can lump together about three characters here.
Yeah, go ahead.
That we don't need. Okay, so Liv, I think, should have been looped in with Chad, because I don't think she has any consequence to the film, like, at all.
No.
The only reason I need to talk about Mindy is because she's the new Randy. Other than that, I don't think she had much to do either. Like, she just kind of, you know, she does the requel scene, which is probably the more important one. So, again, not a lot to say about her because the problem I have with a character like that is she's the replacement for someone else. Like
she's just been slotted in this role. Like, we need a character that's going to kind of be
the new Randy.
The new Randy, kind of like intelligent, but also kind of just cool. But now you're a female, now you're a lesbian, which is fine. I'm not saying anything wrong with that.
That was all great, but it's also just like, for representation, it's great, but also just like this character didn't service
very much. That's it. They just say, well, now you could be the killer. Oh, and then in another scene, it's, oh, see, now you're learning. Don't go down to the basement alone. When Randy did it, there was a performative aspect to like how he presented everything. And, you know, he worked in a video store. There was like,
yeah, they had context. They never gave her any context.
Exactly. There's no, in this film, there's no goddamn context. There's no believability. There's like 20 things here that, you know, I think I could have fixed in a rewrite that don't make any sense, that just make it difficult to kind of really see this as a cohesive piece of work, right? And this is one of them. Like Mindy, you've given a lot of screen time, a lot of face time. She's got lots of dialogue.
I like the
actress is cool, man, but she just regurgitates lines that we heard from Randy in just a way less effective way, in just a way less.
Did you find it weird that Dewey gave the rules instead of her? Because she broke down what the requel was, but Dewey was the one who actually gave Sam a few of the key rules to follow, right? It's always the love interest. It's always someone connected to your past. And the killer is one of the first victim's friends.
Yeah.
And like he basically points two fingers at the two killers.
You know, Dewey is a redemption story because, you know, he's written as like completely down and out. You know, he's lost his job. He's in the bottle. He moved to New York and he's away from Gale Weathers. And now this is his chance at redemption. Like for him to go out, this movie came in at a long hour and like 54 minutes. And he was killed in like with like a good 50 minutes left in the film in that hospital scene. Don't get me started on that hospital scene, man.
We're going to break that down in a minute.
Jesus.
But I wonder if David Arquette just wanted out of the franchise though. And he's like, here, write me out. Like you can
I think
me.
So because he could know it was dog shit, man. Like he could tell that it was like there was not a lot of meat on the bone at this.
Yeah.
You know, at this stage of the game, right?
You know, it's funny. Like, you know, Mindy talks about the requel.
It sounds like our killer is writing his own version of Stab 8, but doing it as a requel.
Which is?
See, you can't just reboot a franchise from scratch anymore. The fans won't stand for it. Black Christmas, Child's Play, Flatliners, that shit doesn't work. But you can't just do a straight sequel either. You gotta build something new, but not too new, or the internet goes bug fucking nuts. It's gotta be part of an ongoing storyline, even if the story shouldn't have been ongoing in the first place. New main characters, yes, but supported by and related to legacy characters. Not quite a reboot, not quite a sequel, like the new Halloween, Saw, Terminator, Jurassic Park, Ghostbusters, fuck, even Star Wars. It always, always goes back to the original.
And she even compares it to Star Wars. And it's exactly what this feels like. Like, if you saw the new trilogy of Star Wars, it really couldn't figure out which way to go with itself. It couldn't tell a new story.
I hated them. I hated, like, 7, 8, 9, yeah.
It had to, like, piece it together from old stories. The second director tried to take it somewhere different, but then he subverted it so far that everyone felt like, man, you just, like, ruined all the first 6 movies. Like, you just threw them off a cliff. And then they tried to pull it back, and then they just went right back to, like, anyway. So this film's kind of doing that.
So hold on. So when does a requel work? Well,
have you seen a good requel? Like, give me an example.
Okay, so listen. I'll give a requel. A sequel, but brings in, like, a reboot of legacy characters that works well. If you look at Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis, and I'm going somewhere with this, Jamie Lee Curtis is, like, written in as a big piece of the story, not as an add-on somewhere kind of somewhere later on in the film. It's an underpinning character with that underpins the story, right? And that's mm-hmm. important because for believability, it makes sense. When they did the Halloween requel, Jamie Lee is fully and fiercely involved. In fact, that was the critique on Halloween Kills, is she's not in the fucking movie. Another one is Creed. Creed is Apollo Creed's mm-hmm. son that comes back to box, but
that was good.
It was an amazing film. And Rocky Balboa, the legacy character, is his trainer. He's integral to the storyline.
He's shifting to a senior role.
Of course, it pulls in a lot of the backstory of the fight between Apollo and Rocky. It pulls in
But new information that we didn't get. Of course,
the dynamic and the dilemma between those two fighters. But then it also follows Creed's story and his, mm-hmm. his, you know, growing up in the shadow of his father, and then Rocky as, like, you know, the antithesis, but then bring him on his team. And then it works. Yeah. It works.
Creed 2 was not great.
No, Creed 2 was garbage. But
Creed 2 was, like, way too long and not edited well. And
so my issue is that Dewey was contacted through a visit, and then Gail and Sydney were contacted through phone calls or text messages. Okay. Means they were on the exterior brought in. So yeah. To me, that doesn't work at all. And I think that's the film's big problem is.
Yeah. I mean, Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell arrived for the final scene.
Basically. Essentially. Yeah. When you watch the first movie and you have the story of the killers, it's overlapped with the story of Cotton, which brings in, like, the Courtney Cox character, right? And, like, how that all functions together. So it's connecting on a few different levels, which creates some good adhesive between the different characters in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like,
yeah, because they have a past that we haven't seen in the movie, and they're drumming it
so
up.
So when you come into this film, it's like all I'm watching is, like, fucking can't hardly wait. And then they're bringing in, like, just circuit, you know, I don't know. Like,
okay. So let me pivot. Yeah. And let me see if we can stretch this talking to another section here. Cause let's talk about the character Sam, who I think we both agree. We don't love the actress, Melissa Barrera. She doesn't seem to sell it. Hold on. I'm going somewhere here. And what I want to talk about here is that Sam seems to be taking the place of Neve Campbell. Like, she's becoming the girl, like the focus protagonist, right? And her, you know, and this is, like, getting to your Creed point, that Creed had his own story that the movie was helping us get through. And, like, that was, it had its own great drama there. Sam's thing is that she's this daughter of Billy Loomis. And not only that, she's so, she has psychotic episodes where she talks to him in a mirror, like my favorite movie, True Romance. Whenever he sees Elvis in the mirror and he's talking to, it's actually Val Kilmer playing Elvis.
Clarence, I like you. I always have. Always will.
She sees Billy Loomis in the mirror, and Billy, like, gives her advice and shit. And it occurred to me by the end of the movie, I'm like, oh my God, they're trying to redeem Billy Loomis. Like, he guides her and helps her to overcome this thing in a way that I'm like, wait a minute, why the hell?
Yeah.
Why are we redeeming that character? Like,
that guy was a psychopathic fucking killer.
Yeah. And in a bit of a sex kink weirdo. Yeah. And, like, I'm just throwing that in just to be funny. But like his psychological damage he was trying to do to Sid was beyond just murdering her eventually. He was building to that. Before he murdered her, he wanted to fuck her and he wanted to fuck her mom or something. Like he did a series of things to manipulate and really mess with her before he tries to even kill her.
That guy was like a sadistic. He was looking for payback, sexual payback, physical payback. I don't think you needed him in the film.
So did Sam Carpenter exist in a previous
film? No, they wrote her in.
Oh, that's a pretty huge reveal to just like kind of casually.
No, you didn't know about that in Scream 4.
There was no buildup to that reveal.
No shit. It was like, I'm Billy Loomis's. She has to tell everybody, right? Because.
But didn't they reveal it to us already? Like she sees him in the mirror and then she says it two scenes later. So we already know. As the audience, we already know. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so if that's true, I'm sorting this all out. I'm like, that's even worse.
It's totally worse.
It makes it like this really, like she should be a very pivotal character.
Also, I find her. For me, Sam is – yes, she cries. Yes, she did. I find her like emotional range in this film actually really poor.
Oh, she's brutal. Honestly, here's my idea. Take Mikey Madison, who plays Amber, and cast her as Sam and make Melissa make her Amber.
Yeah, that would have been better. She just wasn't – Rob, she was not as the main – like Tara is, she's your Drew Barrymore, right? Like she's the sister and she's actually a really good actress.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I thought, yeah, she's good. Like when she's in the hospital and just the makeup they have on her, like I'm believing that she is in pain. I'm believing that she's scared. I'm believing that she's a little bit kind of snarky.
I was a little disappointed we didn't get a wheelchair chase scene because I thought for sure when she went out the hallway, they're like, oh my God, she's going to try to escape in a wheelchair and he's going to chase her. But then she's like so slow and I'm like, oh no.
Well, I got to remember, man, she's got like the pumped out ankle.
Yeah, she's fucked.
You know, oh God, that was like, and then the stab in the hand. Like there's some things that I actually like about this film. I don't want to shit over it.
I agree.
There's some things that are really cool. I just find, I don't know, my annoyance with the film is not allowing me to kind of laugh at it like I want to. Like the first one where I loved it. I just could laugh at some of the individual characters. But this one, I don't. The humor bone is being totally friggin', you know, numbed out by the annoyance bone. And one of the big things is, like we just said, Samantha. Her main monologue, you know, I live my life. I've done more drugs than anybody knows because I had to walk, you know, I had to leave town. And like, that's somebody's trauma and pain. And I'm not going to say that she didn't have that or that anybody that has gone through that wouldn't be feeling that way. What I can critique is just how she's presenting that on screen. And to me, it's not believable. It's the way the character looks. She's like a perfectly like you said, like she doesn't look frazzled at all. Like she's, her hair is always perfect. Everything like, and her face, I don't find very expressive. She always has this like, this face.
Yeah, like she smells, where like she just smells something bad.
Gone, like she smells something bad. Like she's gone somewhere and like they don't have like her frozen pizza flavor or something. Like, I don't know, whatever. Just something is like, they don't have something. And she just kind of gives you like this like cockeyed look, right?
This is what I'm saying. Mikey Madison, who plays Amber, has a real edge of like, you're not certain what her deal is. She seems slightly angry. She's very like suspicious of everyone. And then at the end, when she's unhinged, you're like, wow, this girl was like way more interesting. If she had been Sam,
she's good.
And now you can play with that Billy Loomis being her father thing. And she even, I think, has more of a kind of a physical connection as a sister to Jenna than Melissa, to Tara than Sam ever pulls off. So I thought that would have worked way better. It just would have been like, it just seems like if we are led to believe that Sam might be a psycho killer in the making, the actress never gives us anything that makes us feel like she's heading there. And I know they're building it to the final stab scene at the end, but like it really should have built with a few more steps.
You know what? It's so true, right? It's like, I know they don't want to be predictable, like give the psycho daughter, like the psycho dad. But if the whole movie, like you said, is building and the whole movie is talking about just the slasher, whodunit, not elevated horror, straight linear horror, then give the daughter a little bit of those traits, those attributes that lend itself to how the dad was, I think would have worked nicer. It's a really good point. And Amber, I think, would have worked well because you definitely see how fucking unhinged that woman mm-hmm. is when, let's talk about the two of them. Let's talk about Richie and so Richie, AKA Joshua Jackson, AKA lead singer for Imagine Dragons. Breathing in the chemicals. AKA.
Well, this guy, this is Jack Quaid.
This is Jack Quaid. This is Randy Quaid's, Randy Quaid from, is this Randy Quaid's kid from Armageddon?
I didn't know that, but I was going to say he's in The Boys. I watched The Boys, which is a great show.
So I you know what? I kind of like him. I didn't know if I liked him or not. I feel like.
I like him as an actor.
The writing. Yeah, he's good as an actor. The writing was kind of shit. They could have written that guy some more jokes. Like he kind of. His delivery was really good.
He was
good.
The comic relief in the movie, wasn't he?
But yeah, but he wasn't funny. That, you know, there was a couple times like, oh, well, where were you? Mindy would say, and he would be like, I was, this is in the hospital, right? Where Tara's attacked, I think, or Samantha's attacked. And then like, and then Richie comes in. He's like, where are you? I was watching Netflix.
But oh, like, yeah. Did you not think that Netflix must have produced this movie? The amount of times they say it.
Oh yeah. A lot of product placement. But he just, the delivery was good, but he just, like one of them, like a totally bad joke that could have been way funnier if Stu Mocker had been there, like Matthew Lillard. I totally missed that guy in this film. How crazy is that? A guy that I just ripped to shreds, I totally missed. So when they go to see Dewey for the first time and Dewey says something to Richie and he goes, whoa, what am I supposed to listen to, this shitty Sam Elliott?
And when a man sticks a gun in your face, you got two choices. You can die or you can kill the motherfucker.
Like, really? That's the best you could write? Shitty Sam Elliott?
That was kind of fun. Like,
well, how do you think he was with the, like, how do you think he did as when the reveal comes and he's the killer and
I can't really understand what his motive is.
Okay, hold on.
What's his motive
again? Let me, I'm going to.
Why does.
Toxic fandom.
Oh, yeah.
Fandom toxicity. That's what it is. Like, that's the motive. They're pissed off on the way the films are being portrayed. So what they're doing is they're recreating the original crimes to make a more compelling, like, muse for new films to be made.
For the new Stab movie.
For the new Stab movies. Like, do you buy that?
I thought it was pretty dumb. No, I think, but that's, I get why they're doing it. It's the meta. It's like the snake eating its own tail thing.
Exactly. Like,
and I get it. That's what all these films are about. There's that meta element that has to be preserved. But I was a little bit like, really? We're going to get into toxic fandom here? And like the, I mean, this movie outrightly shits on what do they call it? Elevated horror?
Like Babadook.
Yeah. Throughout the movie, they diss on Hereditary, which you and I can high five on that one.
Rob, when's that pod coming out?
I'm burying it, man. It's going in the vault. One day we're going to come back and we're going to watch it again and we're going to do a better pod. But it follows. The Witch gets a call out in this one.
How have we not done The Witch yet? That's like one of my fucking favorite movies. And we watched that together.
Yeah, in theaters. You know, it's funny that the character who you identified as a jock, his name is Chad, right? Which is like the name that like...
That's who we started with when we started this character segment. It was
Chad. But remember when we talked about Scream the first time, I was like, is this the beginning of incels? Well, Chad is what incels call like a typical dude, right? A typical like white alpha male dude. And then this guy is toxic fandom. I'm starting to connect this constellation between incels, horror movies, toxic fandom. Because this guy is all about like... No, the way they used to do things is the good way, and they should listen to the fans and not like try something new and stick to what we like. And then like fuck these other psychological horror movies. Like I'd rather just like see a good slasher. We need more, you know, we need more murder in the world to make good slashers out of.
Which kind of falls, you know, it kind of falls flat, like the critique on it. You know?
Absolutely. It totally is just like, really? Like I don't know.
Like we went to Elevated Horror because we got bored of the slasher film because it was not bored, but well, bored. And because it was one thing and it was.
Well, because using fear.
Being redone. It was.
Fear was becoming so one note. Fear was being chased by a guy with a knife. Like these new movies are investigating other ways that fear manifests itself and other ways that you can scare the shit out of people in a film type setting. But like. You know, jump scares and guy chasing with a knife got boring.
My question to you is like, where does it go from here? Because I finished this film and I'm thinking to myself, all right, so let me just kind of stratify it. So as a killer, Ghostface, okay, Ghostface is kind of cool. How could they reinvent him? To me, I always know there's somebody dressed up underneath it, so it doesn't have the same appeal as some of the other iconic slashers.
I like that. I like that it's...
No, I know you like it. I don't know. It's not my favorite.
It does bother me at times when, like, you know he's a real guy. He's a real person, I mean. And he's, like, vulnerable. And then there'll be scenes where he'll be, like, beating the shit out of someone in the kitchen and, like... Then they reveal that there was two other people in the living room two steps away and they never bothered to come help. There's at least three times that happens in this movie, by the way, where like the...
Oh, yeah, exactly. Where there's somebody close that could help out.
And they just stand there and stare or just don't help. They don't come into the scene. Like right at the end, actually, Courtney Cox and Nev Campbell come in from the kitchen after Sam has fought for her life with Ghostface for like a 3-minute fight scene.
That would have been cool if you just would have, and I thought about that too. Why don't you just have two Ghostface come in this movie? Like that would have been something.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's a little like, it's like the one note scale, you know, the Debussy, right? It's like a one trick pony, but.
Well, they had them fighting simultaneously because it was Amber versus Gail and Sydney while Sam was fighting Richie. In two different parts of the house. And it did get a little WrestleMania at times in that scene. But you're right. Like, it'd be funny if it all like crossed over and they were all in the same room together. And it's just like a full out, like a Korean Kung Fu movie battle at the end.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been good. In Stu Mocker's house. That was
So the house reveal pissed me off too, because we didn't know where we were going until we just arrived at the end. And we're like, oh, it's the same house.
Yeah, it's the same house, and they do the old like pullback of like they do the super fast Scorsese where you see like, oh, it is Stu Mocker's house. Like,
and Richie doesn't want to go there. He's trying to talk them out of it, and yet he knows he wants to get them there.
Or maybe he was just subverting it to really know that.
But that's it feels where, like convenient. Feels a little convenient. There's so many kills in this movie where Ghostface pushes his knife through people's necks or face and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, I was wondering, does nobody know how to, like, you know, kick in this movie? Because everyone just, like, tries to push him back with their arms, and then this, fuck it, he's got me. This gets stabbed through the throat. Why don't you kick him? How about just a few kicks here and there?
We need to get Steven Seagal on the, you know, like, little Aikido or something.
Will you excuse me for just 1 second?
Like... The one dude that's gets the knife pushed right through his neck. If that's Richie, okay, Rob, this brings me back to like just the idea of believability and just how things just don't need to make sense. Like nobody cares. And maybe that's just what a horror film is. Maybe we just overanalyze it and this should just be like a fun slasher film. But Richie is not going to be able to push a knife through that guy's throat like he did. Mm. If that guy, Wes, Maze Runner dude, no chance. It's like, it's not happening. Okay. Like
he's just not physically powerful enough.
He's not physically strong. Wes is stronger. He might be 5% physically stronger, but why doesn't that guy turn or
that's
twist
what I'm saying,
or do something?
Kick, like, I don't think it makes sense. Like, I've never been stabbed.
No, it doesn't.
In the neck, but
nothing makes
if
sense.
If you're about to be stabbed, I think your whole body twists to try to avoid, right?
If you look at old slasher films, okay? Now, I'm not going to reference all these like old films, but a lot of Friday the 13th films, when Jason was going to kill somebody, often... he was an imposing figure, but often when the figure was a female, he could overpower them. When it was a male, he somehow was able to get them in a compromised position and then he killed them, which lended itself to like the believability. Here you have a guy that is dressed up like Ghostface and is pushing a knife through somebody's neck. Okay. And the person is allowing it to happen.
Essentially, yeah. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, just kick him. Like, just kick him in the fucking...
Just kick him or fucking move. Yeah. Anyways.
So let's talk about the kills since we've already started there. Let's just focus here on the hospital scene. Jamie, tell me. Okay.
should we do a top five
bad things wrong with this hospital scene?
Let's go. I'm going to go. Yeah, we could go. Let's go top five bad things wrong. Okay.
That's not even good.
Okay.
Image.
First off,
bad things wrong.
First off. Okay. I'm going to come in at five with illumination.
I was going to say that too.
First off, the security lights take the lights down, but the lights were already fucking dim down to like four on your dimmer. Everybody go to your dimmer switch right now. Go to everybody turn it to four.
Turn the lights bigger.
It was like, it was so dark in there. It made me think of like the only hospital that was darker was Halloween 2, and it was like pitch black. Like people are trying to work, okay? I've been to more goddamn hospitals than anyone else in my life. Not just people out there. Broke my arm playing soccer, tore my ACL, rafting, doing all sorts of stuff. Hospitals are like the brightest places in the world. So Rob, I'm going to come in with number five, illumination. Okay.
I think we know what we're going to say for number one. So let's try to pad our way up. I'm going to go with number four, worst thing, bad, wrong things about the hospital scene. when Dewey is fighting this guy, there's a scene where he's getting pretty compromised. I think he's dropped his gun and now they're going fisticuffs and whoever can get to the gun first kind of moment. There's three other people down the hall and none of them bother to like, maybe we should go help Dewey out.
I know they're just looking at him.
They're just watching this. Or I know they're trying to get the one girl away, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, if you had a bunch of people, it'd be a lot easier to overpower this guy than maybe just one of you. That's my number four.
I'm going to come in with number three. Getting shot in the head just isn't what it was anymore.
Well, he got shot in the chest, I thought.
Okay, so if you actually go back and take a look, he's got the bulletproof vest on, but the initial shot looks like the angle of the gun looks like it is pointed towards his head. Also,
but then Dewey says you gotta shoot him in the head to be sure.
Yeah, that's true. Still, it looks like it was. I'm not sure that bulletproof vest caught everything. Anyway, that was an issue. I wasn't sure that. And even also, if you're taking three shots, I don't know what kind of gun that is, but if you're taking three shots to the chest, like, shouldn't that knock you down for a little while longer than, you know, like 45 seconds?
Well, if you get, I don't know this. If you get,
I've never been shot in the chest
with a bulletproof vest on. I mean, I've heard it hurts a lot, but doesn't mean you can't get up and run away, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it knocks you out. But I'll take issue with the cell phone going off and that being the thing that like kills Dewey. Cause I was just like, I don't even think Dewey would, he's a trained cop. Like, I don't think he would be distracted by a cell phone, but okay. Number two. If you're going to try to escape in a wheelchair, go faster than that.
She's got a knife through the hand.
But come on, like at that point, you're not even getting away. Like you're just creating a.
Well, she doesn't know where to go. It's so fucking dark. Like she can't.
But like, I'm trying to remember how this scene unfolds. Like she's in her room alone and then she decides, fuck it, I'm out of here. And then they get attacked and then she gets out and she's like just creeping away. And I actually was like, oh, please.
Yeah, she's in the hallway and then she sees the guy's been killed and then Ghostface comes out and then Dewey comes.
I was like, please tell me she's going to like try to have to like outrace him. Like she's going to get, I thought she was going to get further away in the wheelchair and she's going to have to build up speed because Ghostface was going to come out and be running at her full steam. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to be a chase scene in a wheelchair. And I was just really disappointed that didn't happen.
All right. I'm going to come in with number one with nobody was wearing masks in the hospital.
Okay. That is not number one. Fuck you. Number one, Jamie, is there's nobody in the hospital. Exactly. There's nobody else in this entire hospital.
I'm going to come in with lack of personnel.
Staffing is a real issue. HR needs to be called.
Everybody's out with COVID. It is like ridiculous. Even in Halloween, even in Exorcist 3, there are fucking people working and they get
working.
Killed.
Where's the patience? There's no patience even in this hospital. There's nobody in this hospital except for the dead security guard who is securing, I guess, one patient.
But like, okay, this is what just fucking annoys me about movies. Like, did the director just think, oh, we'll just make it a creepy, empty hospital and it's all good? Like, it's not believable at all. So what it does is it fractures the foundation of the whole movie. Yeah. Like, did they not see that? Or they just think like, oh, fuck, it doesn't matter. This is where it makes me think that the attention to detail throughout the film, and like, there's going to be somebody going, oh man, you 41-year-old, shut the fuck up. Just watch the movie and enjoy it. But I'm saying where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm-hmm. You could have, okay, for example, I'm going to draw a parallel. Okay. One of the things that they actually do really well in this film is where Wes and his mom are killed is they subvert like the creepy, dark, you know, he's getting plates out to have sushi. It's daylight. Well, it's very normal. It's a very real shower scene. That whole scene is believable. You know, me and you have all experienced mm-hmm. that. So therefore that horror and that fear is real. And outside of being overpowered by a knife getting jammed into your throat, which I think is, it's not realistic. That whole scene is like, that's probably the scariest part in the film.
Yeah.
Because you have, like the fridge door that opens. There's a couple, it's like a good James Wan kind of tension mm-hmm. build, right? That's good. It makes sense. It's scary. That's the thing that we have to remember is that the hospital scene, I just was like, I didn't find it scary at all because the whole time I'm thinking, like, where are all the people that would be fucking yelling at you to yeah. like, or just like, if hospitals are busy places, right? If they had shown
a door with like a bike lock on it or something, like one of the main doors was chained closed or something to explain that maybe this hallway, he had already like locked off the doors or something. Just something that explains why there's nobody there. That might have made more sense. And again, picking up on the West murder scene, his mom, Sheriff, killed on her front doorstep in broad daylight, stabbed multiple times. Nobody seems to be around to notice this. And you just saw her drive away in the car where it's a busy suburban area. Yeah. Her name is suburban. Yeah, it looked like kind of like she lived on a main street. So, Jamie, we've obviously got some problems with this film. There's some good scenes. There's some things we like, but yeah, I think we got some things we want to untangle here. So let's get into the review, and we can here's where we can really dive into what we really liked and didn't like about this one. If you're going to make a film that calls upon the past like this, you know, I maybe that's the problem right there. Like, why are we so concerned with these requels? Why do we like these? Again, goes back to my question off the top about like, what are we getting out of this film? Like, what do we like about it? If the slasher itself is a dead genre, Scream is, you know, trying to keep it alive. Halloween's trying to keep it alive, but maybe it's not really, maybe it's a dead genre. Like, is there anyone else doing it? And Scream is trying to say, let's go back to what was good about it. And what was great about Scream original was that it was a meta whodunit. We didn't know who the killer was. We were trying to figure it out. It was somebody on the cast, which was fun. It was kind of like a horror version of Clue. But now that you've done 5 of these films, it becomes harder and harder to like care because especially with this cast of characters, we don't know many of them or any of them. And we don't get time to get to know them very well. Some of them have a couple lines here and there. But you also don't get any sense, like they try to do that thing where they cast shadows on everyone, like maybe you did it. Well, maybe you're the suspect, or maybe you're the killer. But at the end of the day, you're like, well, what, like, that's just like dialogue. We didn't actually see them do something suspicious. And then the only person actually that does do something suspicious is Liv looking over at Scumbag pulling up in his Camaro. And there's that one moment of like, oh, she's not being totally honest. Maybe she's still sleeping with this guy. Maybe she still knows him. Maybe he's not an ex-boyfriend. Maybe he's a brother who's, you know, got some other you know, maybe there's like another backstory we don't know. Nope. Turns out it's just exactly what they said. And he gets killed the next scene. So there's a lot of disappointments and things that are set up and don't really seem to go anywhere. The main premise of the main character just doesn't seem to matter that much, that she's Billy Loomis's. I mean, I understand it matters to the plot, but it didn't come out in any way except in the final scene where she kills her boyfriend, who is the Scream killer, who is Ghostface. And we get to see her finally like wrench a knife into some guy 100 million times. So, you know, there's these scenes that we've talked about that were just bizarre. The hospital scene is a mess. There's Easter eggs in this film, and I just didn't care to look for them, to tell the truth. I saw a couple by accident, but I didn't like think, oh, I should look for Easter eggs. I just didn't care. I wrote on one of my notes at one point, I'm so bored. So this film did not keep me interested long enough to recommend it. I definitely think if you're someone who's seen the Scream movies and likes them, you might enjoy like the sort of basic how it works, like the whodunit part of it. But I don't think you're going to like, and like we said, we like some of the kills. Like there's some gruesome gore that like is chilling and kind of, you know, leaves a creepy feeling up your spine. But the plot and the whole story and the whole like reinvigorating the meta slasher, just, I don't think that's working. It kind of signifies to me that this requel kind of stinks. I'm giving this one 2 steps.
Oh my God, that's the lowest rating that you've given a movie since we started running Scary
Rob. This is not out of anger. This is like, there are some good things. I think if you're a Scream fan and you really like Scream, maybe you'll enjoy it, but I don't think you're going to love it. And I'm just warning you, you're not going to love it.
So when I was, I think starting my 4th or 5th year of teaching, and I think I was teaching a language class for, you know, the 3rd or 4th time. I was trying to do some new things with like a novel study that I had done before, and I had done it a few different ways. And then I was trying to pull from some of the stuff that I had done. And I was also bringing some new stuff, which you think would be really good. But then I also wanted to do a little bit of like community outreach, and I found it getting kind of big, and I was having a difficult time sort of just pinning it down as to actually what I wanted to do. So I took it to my principal. And I remember he goes to me, he just gave me a good piece of advice. He goes, just keep it simple. Just keep
it simple, stupid.
Figure out what you want to do and just keep it simple. I went back, fucking distilled it, took it apart, got the key bits that I wanted to kind of move forward with. And, you know, I went and it was good, right? Delivered it to the kids. Point of the story is this movie, as Rob was saying, as we've talked about the whole thing, this meta look at horror slasher films into the 6th film, pulling legacy characters, trying, you know, pulling things from the first movie, from all the movies, and then having new characters that are critiquing the film within the film. To me, I was really trying to piece it out, brainstorm it. It became very convoluted in terms of what's happening, what are they trying to accomplish. And then as a new film, there's nothing, Rob and I talked about this, there's nothing new that's really offered outside of the connections to Billy Loomis with the daughter, or Stu Mocker's sister's nephew, the guy that gets killed in 2 minutes, which is probably one of the more interesting characters. So the attempts to make it, I guess, the plot interesting or to reinvigorate the plot just completely fell flat. And in terms of the plot, there's lots of issues throughout the whole film. The hospital scene, we've broken down, you know, like when the sheriff gets killed and the son gets killed, that's a double murder. Like when the aftermath, it's like there's fucking Old Man River fucking taking gauze out of a lunchbox to, you know what I mean, to get ready. There's like, you could walk up there and, you know, start selling lemonade on the street corner. There's
reporters
like
reporters are like, no, like right in front of the cops. Like they're just getting in there.
Oh, exactly. Like the guy rolls up, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like, I know like your friends have been killed. I'm sorry. There's like, it's ridiculous. It's completely unbelievable. The, you know, and also in the plot, just the, I was very critical of this in, you know, when we potted it out, just the integration of, and also this film has made me a little bit angry because, you know, Sydney's character and Courtney Cox's character in the original film was like, they were so good. And so was Dewey. Like, they were great characters and they were completely ruined in this movie and spoiled because they weren't able to do anything. They weren't given enough quality dialogue.
I thought they were all going to get killed. I thought that was the idea.
They should have. They should have been all killed. One of the things that you actually made a really good point of that I just want to touch on the review here, just with the plot, is a good way to get character development and for characters to grow is to have them actually have conversations with each other and not just accuse each other of doing things, which they do continuously throughout this film. And it gets annoying. Well, you might be the suspect, or you don't go down to the basement. Oh, now you're learning. It's like, okay, man, just fucking just talk about something, do something. Anyways, that's my issue with the plot. My characters, there's some characters that I like. I actually like Chad. I like Tara. I think Tara's great. I think she was really good as cast. The Samantha is completely forgettable. Mm-hmm. I watched the movie and she is completely forgettable as that character. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're a great actress, but you were just completely forgettable in this role. I don't think that you were cast correctly for this role at all.
That's what I'm saying. Make her the killer. Make her Amber.
Yeah.
And that whole shtick of who she is will work all the way through the film, and then the reveal will be way more intense. And if she could fall apart a little more and be a little more crazy like that, like we saw her with that final murder scene, that would work as the killer. Whereas
Amber was great. Like, she had like half of her face burnt off and then she's coming for more. Like, that was great. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff is good. And like,
I'm not going to talk. Referencing the original, like right down to the last detail, right?
For sure. This movie, I wanted it to be great, just like I wanted Halloween Kills to be great. And that movie sucks shit. And this movie. Oh, it did, Rob. You haven't even seen it.
I'm just saying. It's fucking garbage. You usually don't disparage the films this hard.
No, man. I love the Halloween franchise. I grew up on that stuff. That was my Sesame Street. It's this movie for me.
Explains so much.
I'm only gonna give it a little bit higher than you did. I'm gonna give this. I don't think this is a good movie. I'm coming in at 2 footsteps and a toe. Oof. So we really didn't, Rob, me and you, or you and I, we didn't like this film.
There's like scenes I like, there's moments I like, there's some dialogue I like, there's some acting that I like, some performance I like, but overall it doesn't come together for me in a way that I enjoyed. I was bored at times, and it's the same with me. Like, I hated Star Wars 7. Like, what was it called? Who cares?
The Force Awakens.
Because it just felt like, oh, they're just retelling the other movie with new CGI. And
yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
They're retelling Mindy.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all I'm saying is that, to come back to the original point about perspective, if you have seen the original film from 1996 and like the meta take on it and the poking fun at horror films and not doing it within the film that you're watching is clever. But for us that have seen them all and then to see it again, it's like, it's tired. It just doesn't feel like the franchise has any steam anymore. To me, this definitely did not feel like a reinvigoration of the franchise at all.
And that's the sad part, is that it feels like the snake has finally eaten itself completely.
Yeah. But someone that's never seen these films before, you know, is this just like a fun film? Is this a 3.5 out of 5 stars? Probably.
Yeah, it's a good critique to say, like, hey, we're not trying to shut it down for the new user or the new viewer who wants to
I think that's important. Is you know what I mean? I wanted to make sure that I took a look at it like that.
It's so hard though, because it's constantly referencing the first one directly. Like, it's outwardly saying it. Like, it's not just like a homage. It's literally calling back the first movie in several scenes with cast members, with relationships to cast members from those movies, or, you know, not cast members, characters from those films. Like, now it's the sons and now it's the daughters. And it's like, who fucking cares? Like, they had nothing to do with it. Why does it matter? And they just don't come together the way the cast did in the first movie.
That's the thing. It just doesn't, the movie just doesn't grow organically into something that it's its own film. It just feels like they're constantly, and not feels, they are, they're constantly referencing mm-hmm. just older films, the original film.
The best example, but the film, we talked about Billy, right? How Billy Loomis was such a, he had a several things he was doing to get under Neve Campbell's skin, to get under Sydney's skin, and then to slowly like kind of tear apart her brain before he had sex with her and then plot to kill her. Well, what was Richie doing? Like Richie's final move was bring her to the old house that she won't even recognize because it's not the house that she knows. It's the one that Neve Campbell, like Sydney will know, but not Sam. So like, okay, so just bringing her back to the old scene. That seems empty to me. Like he's not doing something to psychologically mess with Sam and like really tear her down. His villainous is still so stupid is kind of what I'm saying. Like his evil is stupid. It's not as pure evil the way Billy Loomis was.
You know what? I didn't like this movie. I didn't like this movie. You definitely didn't like. This is your lowest rating of 30 episodes.
30 episodes. Speaking of which, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Running Scared where we review. That's a good pivot. We're going to review the movie Dog Soldiers, and we're going to review another film with our friend Ari Fleeman from 6 a.m. Run. We're going to review, what's the name of the movie again?
We're going to go ahead and just do Chopping
Mall. I love the name of this film. And we're working on a Jogcast, which should be out. Well, still give us another month on that one probably. Listen, this has been fun, Jamie. Anything else to wrap up this one?
No, that's been good. Everything's, I'm excited for my vacation. You know what I mean? Just spring showers, spring May flowers, April's
here. You got to pod from Vegas, though, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Well, that's the, you know what? That's a nice thing. Honestly, yeah.
You can take a week off.
That's the nice thing, man. We can pod from anywhere, right? You know what I mean? Especially when I'm at the World Cup in Qatar, when Canada is there, I'll be podding from there. No, I'm excited for Canada. I'm excited for all my sports. The Jays are doing great. The Leafs are doing great. Austin Matthews has almost 60 goals. The Raptors are going to be fifth in the playoffs. Friends of Running Scare Pod, listeners of Running Scare Pod, Rob and I are huge sports fans. We don't talk sports. We talk movies. But if you ever want to talk sports, we can bring that into the pod as well. What is the best sports horror film?
Oh, you know, I was thinking about this.
That's an interesting question.
Because we could get Winston McMartin on here to do it with us. That would be the movie. The Fan is the only one I could think of. It's more of a thriller, though. It's
I would love to do The Fan. Can we get Winston to come on?
Oh, for sure we could.
Oh, that guy, I like that guy. That guy's good.
All right. That's been another great pod. Thanks for listening to us and hanging out with us for the last hour and a half or wherever we cut this down to. And tune in next time for another episode of Running Scared. The Running Scared podcast is written and produced by Robert Lendrum and Jamie Roberts. This episode edited by Robert Lendrum, with original music by Jamie Roberts. Find us on social media and tune in for another episode of Running Scared.
I'm a fan of scary movies and knives. What's your favorite scary movie?